Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
I am doing great, my man. How are you?
I'm good. As fans of the show know, Monday mornings we have our editorial calls with you, myself, Henry, and our editor Travis, and we talk about a variety of topics. Last week, while you were away, you know, Henry joined the call on Monday, and of course, Travis and I were talking about European football, because that's what we do before we join. But we have these wide-ranging conversations, and you pose an interesting question to us in the chat this morning, which will be an article, and we'll discuss it more next week.
It's going to be really cool.
In depth on a podcast.
What we're doing.
Really, and it's about just this incredible talent we have in the NBA, and, you know, like with anything, we always want to know, well, who's the best, right? Who is the best of the best? And it's a hard thing to parse. And it's something that I believe that you don't own perpetually because you just are, right? Because there's always someone behind you trying to fight you and knock you off the top of the mountains like King of the Hill, right? Or King of the Court. And then and it's somebody else's turn.
Or, as I just told someone 20 minutes ago, Game of Thrones.
Correct. Yes.
Kill or be killed, man. Yes. Everyone wants to be the king. There only is one, and most of the others are
right.
Killed.
Yeah. And once you're up there, there's only one place for you to go, right? Is back down to the bottom for someone else to take it from you. So it's really incredible to watch what these guys are doing. And I said to you, David, that I've been watching Luka's last, I guess, 5 or 6 games. And I'm like, and I did this thing to you. I was like, David, what do you do? He's hitting step back threes to the left. I'm like, you can't guard him. And like, I don't play in the NBA, but I'm sounding frustrated. And so I said to David, I go, well, here's a question I should ask him. When you have players who you help guard these monsters and these ridiculously gifted people, what do you do? What do you tell them besides pray? That's the first thing I know.
I'm looking up right now his last number of games. 4 of 8 from 3, 6 of 11 from 3. He's had some bad games too, but he's shooting 40% from 3 right now. He's taken 9 free throws a game. Yeah, he's basically averaging 32, 10, and 9 is what he's at right now.
And David, he's big.
4 turnovers.
He's very big and physical.
So when you asked the question, I answered it. I am, every week I prepare guys to play against people like Luka. And to specifically answer your question, which you asked about the step back threes, remember what I told you?
Yes.
Yeah,
that is the lowest possible, lowest percentage shot you can take. So if he's hitting those,
right,
he's hitting them.
The mistake you make in defending those guys is you let their success radically alter what you're doing individually, and now you're really fucked because you have no foundation anymore. You have to guide these guys towards something. There are exceptions. Like, for example, with Dirk, I used to have my guys do different things with Dirk, but he wasn't a great driver. Even when he was younger, he wasn't great. And so there was a choice. Luka's different. There's nothing Luka can't do. Because we're speaking of Luka, there's other guys too. Although I think you can guide him left. I happen to think he's not as good going left, especially to the rim. It's not so easy. He's an expert at getting back to where he wants to go, like Harden is with his left hand. But when he elects to shoot that step back three or the step sideways three to create space, it's a mistake to think, oh my God, I can't let him do that. Because he's going to use that to his advantage and you're probably going to end up fouling him. And so one of the goals we set is, number one, never foul. Obviously, time and score context, We're excluding that end of games. Never foul him. And don't get so caught up in taking that away that he can then fake it and then get you to foul him or just blow right by you. You'll never want to get blow-bys. You always want to stay connected somehow. Hopefully help is coming. You can't be undisciplined with your footwork and how you're closing out. You can't be undisciplined with your eagerness to try to contest his shot and get into the point where you're fouling him. There's lots of little things about like getting over the screen, taking the right angle to recover back to get in front of him again. If you trail him directly, he'll stop short and you'll run into him and that's a foul. But the big picture, the macro view would be keep him off the line, make him take the lowest percentage shot possible. If he's successful seven back three or four times in a row, well, that's a strategy problem your coach needs to solve, not you. In other words, he can now do whatever he wants, and he's making it at a high percentage. And so now you have to bring help, trap him out of the screen, send a double out the screen. Like there's things you can do, but not as the player. The player has to continue to make him take the toughest shots possible. The example I gave you guys is if you're playing blackjack and you keep hitting on 14, 15, 16 because the house is showing – you know, a face card, let's say, or nine. The house isn't worried when you go on a hot streak. It's just not worried. The math is on their side. I coach with math as my background. We're going to do everything based on math. And then it's up to the coach to pivot. And sometimes they don't at their own, havoc, their own risk. But you got to take away what they're best at. Because Luka's great at the rim. And he's great in the second box. And so he's just good. Now, I looked it up. His best, maybe this is Kyrie. Kyrie is like 40-something percent catch and shoot, 50% one dribble threes. So Kyrie, you have to crowd him on that first dribble and make him take a second dribble. He's not as good. He's good, not as good. And so math dictates all of this. And if you really get into the weeds, you can look at sides of the floor and all of that, which I tend not to do with players in the regular season. Because it's too much for them sometimes. Plus, because they're guarding more than one guy. They're switching 1-3, 1-4. A lot of teams switch 1-4. And you don't want to paralyze them with analysis. You know, you want to keep it simple. But this number one, don't get frustrated when they make those shots and change what you're doing. It's very hard to do. They're so competitive.
You know, it's interesting, right? Because part of what you do also, David, you always talk about the art and the science behind this, right? And when you're coaching guys, it's the same thing. But there are certain guys in the league who, to your point, don't get frustrated. Your Jrue Holidays, your Alex Caruso's, your young Andrew Nembhard's, certain perimeter defenders who they know. But so is that something you can teach a player to not get frustrated? But they're competitive, right? They're like, but coach, he's made five in a row. Like, I can't just let him keep doing that.
Yes. So, yeah, Derek White is also magnificent. What amazing hands he has. You can coach it. It doesn't always work. Some players aren't great at that, and their competitiveness overwhelms them. And I always learn a lot from these players. So many of them are successful because they just set a goal and, fuck, I'm going to make this happen. And some of them have had really terrible life stories, and they slog through. An agent once said to me, the equivalent of Andy Dufresne crawling through, you know, a mile of shit in the sewers, right? A lot of these players have had similar kinds of lives for lots of different reasons. And they're cleaning their boat, you know, and Zay or not to weigh, whatever. I used to be able to say it. What is the name of the city they went to?
I know what you mean.
And they made it. But here's the thing. It's still Game of Thrones. They're still coming after you all the time. But it's a lot, you know, the great golfers who say the pressure isn't making the 4-foot putt to win the Masters and the $8 million. Normally, those guys have done this a lot already, and they have four yachts. The pressure is the guy that has to keep making the 4-foot putts to keep his tour card, so he can pay for the travel so he's not broke. Yeah,
right.
And so that's the thing is at the highest level, they've dealt with that pretty well. Everyone else, it's just hard just to stay relevant. New guys come in every year. And so, but the answer to your question is, you can coach it. You need to coach it. Emotional IQ, you know, Gerardo, my son was telling me about a really talented player in college who looks like he's a first-round pick talent-wise, but Max isn't sure he's going to make it. I don't know how he knows all this because he doesn't know if he has the head for it. Not that he's not competitive, and not that he's a psycho, nothing like that. For whatever reason, Max just isn't sure this guy's got the head to make it. Because this is a big part. I think he's talking about emotional IQ. It's a grown-up's game. It really is. That's why so few rookies are any good. It's not just that they're learning the game. It's that they're still learning how to be an adult. You know, you and I were just college dudes.
Right.
What pressure do we have? Don't get arrested.
None. Yeah.
Right. Maybe basically there's a very small, low bar we had to get. These guys are different. Gerard, I was better than me because I don't watch it, but I was told one of the reasons why you don't see many players in the dunk contest is because they just don't want to deal with the failure.
Yes.
On social media. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, correct.
And so
they want to get embarrassed.
Right. Well, they don't have a choice in games. Like, you have to guard these guys who will embarrass you. It's a given. You're going to get dunked on. You're going to get scored on. You're going to fall down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't love.
It happens.
I've told you this. I don't love when the ooh and ah, when a guy shakes you and you fall down the crowd. You don't see it in the NBA too much. I don't love that because I want guys to want to compete and not be afraid of being ridiculed. Failure is part of this, right? And so all of these things tie in together. And so, we have to coach our guys up on being emotionally mature, get off the roller coaster, get on the merry-go-round, lock in on your job, and understand that sometimes you're going to get your ass kicked.
Yeah. I mean, it's the best players in the world, right? And in many ways, it's mano a mano in a one-on-one guarding situation. So you have to be prepared for that. And I think it's interesting, that sort of not worrying about failure, that is what lionizes Jordan types and Kobe types and those types of psycho competitors in our, in American lexicon and sports culture, right? Now we know it all gets mythologized over time and the stories get blown out of proportion, but it's that idea of, I don't care. Like, I will do whatever and sell out to stop this guy. I don't care if he scores on me. He ain't scoring on me next time, right? It's that ability to come back and like continually do it in the face of, I might get embarrassed, but I don't care if I get embarrassed. That's a special skill. It really is. Really, really is.
Correct. And it's also, like, let's say, Luca, for example, if you're a smaller guy, there's nothing you can do on the step back. If you're longer than him, then maybe there is something. It's still a shot you want to force. But if he's making three in a row, instead of having to then bring a double, which is a coaching decision, the longer guy might say, you know what? I'm going to take that away and make him do something else. That's not a bad strategy. There's just not many guys that can do it because they just can't get there with their length, but some guys can. And so I'm a big believer with those kinds of guys, make them beat you differently. Don't let them beat you the same way twice. But there's like six of those dudes in the world that you can say, take this, they can take everything away. So you're making the offense pick the poison you're willing to swallow, right? And if they do it and you're getting poisoned, well, then take that away. But most guys can't take that away. So make them do that. And then if you can't do it because he keeps making it, then bring in the reinforcements, which is the double team. And hard hedge can make him pass it. There's things that coach can do. In pure ISO, he's got to send someone potentially, which also leaves someone else open. But at least it won't be that motherfucker making the shots. It'll be someone different. I mean, I'm not kidding. When I was a young coach and you called timeout late in games, I would literally say, no fucking way I'm letting him run what he's drawing up right now. I didn't do this for the first couple of years because I had too much pride. And then I realized, pride's a nightmare. I have no pride. If I'm trying to win the game, I'm just trying to win the game. And so I never used to play zone. I would send a double team, which means you're zoning. It's two on the ball, three zoning up behind it. I would change up matchups because I know you're drawing something up and I'm not letting you draw up what you think I've been doing all game, which I have been maybe. And so I'm doing something different. That's when I really started changing everything. I never played defense more than three times in a row, basically in the same kind of defense. If you were really good, I kept you guessing all the time. The problem is, in the world's best players, they're all speed chess players. So they're seeing it. And they've seen it all before. We've said this before. Tom Brady has seen every blitz. It doesn't mean he won't get beat sometimes because players still have to block. Correct. But you're not going to surprise them almost ever, maybe once a month or something. Well, you think Luka hasn't seen every defense?
Right.
Come on, Jokic and Embiid, they've seen everything. They're all genius basketball players. I talk to them as a student sometimes. Let me learn from you at that level because they've seen everything. And they've also had, in many cases, great coaches and great teammates that offer different things. And I'm in a bubble by myself. I listen to clinics and I talk to other coaches. It's not the same. These players have seen it all, and it's so easy for them, which is also a challenge because it's not easy for everybody else. So their job is to tell them. You'll see LeBron explaining something to a player, and you know the player's like, bro, that's Greek to me, man. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Exactly.
Although they're really good typically at explaining it, I will say. The players do have a good feel for that. But this is the chess match that we have because both sides are doing it.
Yeah. The famous one meme is when LeBron talked to a rookie, Austin Reeves, about what he's talking and breaking it down to him. And you can see Austin's eyes just go, what? Like, no, really? Bug out. Like, how did you? It's like, well, he's LeBron James. Like, what do you mean? Like, talk about speed chess player. He's got it all in his brain and he's trying to spit it out to you.
I will say, just to finish this topic, I will say the organizing principle that you started a game with, let's say guarding Luka, guarding Kyrie, which are two incredibly hard guys to guard. Kyrie really, as crazy as it sounds, in terms of his watching offense, he might be my favorite guy to watch in the league.
David, his ball skills are just
and his shot making. He's amazing at the rim for a little guy.
So good.
He's not amazing at the rim. He's amazing for a little guy. He's an encyclopedia of talent. He's really extraordinary. So take away the other stuff. I think he's been fine this year.
He's been excellent this year. Is there a single negative thing?
Yeah.
Nope.
I watched him play a bunch. But that you have to get that you have to get the initial strategy right. I don't remember asking, did you watch Game of Thrones?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So the sorry, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't watched it 10 years later.
I mean, it's been out for a million years.
Right. When they're fighting the zombies at the end, whatever they're called, and they White send Walkers. Out their best warriors a mile in the distance for them all to get smoked. That was bad strategy. Like, they got lucky to win that fight. You can't normally win a fight when you start out with a terrible organizing principle. So you it's like asking Kyrie, let's make him finish at the rim. Yeah, you're fucked. Yeah. He's just that talented, right? You can't do it. You have to have a better organizing principle to start. And then you can pivot here and there, which I think is a smart move. But you got to get the first one right. And that's based individually and on the coaches.
As we wrap up this, and again, guys, definitely stay tuned for next week. We're going to have some good stuff about, again, this idea of best player in the world. How much of being successful defensively, of course, is having the right strategy, principles, disposition, all the various things. But your willingness to study game film and player film in particular, so you can start figuring out tendencies and knowing they like to do this counter when this thing happens.
Oh, I mean, it's important for everyone. Yeah, at all levels, especially if you're facing, you know, these titans, you have to do it. I was talking to a player last night. He's 21. He had 6 turnovers in a game, and he was so in pain. And he walked me through what he thought. I had not watched the tape of the game. He had watched it already on tape. And he told me, I mean, turnover, and I got to do this, and I got to do this. And, of course, afterwards, I had to say, like, now do you understand why I've been saying play off 2 feet more? He's like, yes, sir, I understand now. And I told him, I've never loved you more than I love you right now, because your willingness to watch yourself suck is a huge step forwards. You have to do it. You have to, as a parent, I can tell you, when I've looked at myself, like, what the fuck am I doing as a dad? That's how I get better, is you have to be, but you also have to be humble to recognize that, oh, this guy's just better than me. That doesn't mean, like, I feel like Pop did this, Gerard, when the Spurs beat the Lakers in that last series in 2015, maybe 2014, 2014. I think I've written this before. I think Pop said to Kawhi, LeBron's better than you. But that doesn't mean over a 7-game series, he'll be better than you. It just means over the course of 82, he's a better player than you. Just fucking let it fly, Kawhi. Guard the fuck out of him. Shoot those early threes in transition, blah, blah, blah.
You mean the Heat, not the Lakers. Yeah.
Yeah, for the Heat. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it worked. And they won the championship, right?
Sure did.
Kawhi was, I believe, finals MVP.
He sure was.
And no one saw that coming. I think Pop just said, over the 7 games, let's see if you can't be better. And that's really such a key, is just let's just outplay this dude tonight. Let's just do it tonight. And here's how we do it. And then we'll have to pivot, maybe, and we'll pivot. Mm-hmm. But have a good approach to begin with.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's a good lesson for life. Have a good strategy from the beginning, right?
Yeah.
And then you can pivot. Well, you're going to have to pivot in life. That's for sure. We were looking at the standings. It's early. We got about 24 or 25 games, depending on who you are, left in the season. But I think there's some study done where, like, where you are record-wise in, like, February is pretty much where you're going to be around, right? Not too much drastic changing happens. Now, there's always, you know,
caveats with that. But I was looking at the East and I said, ooh, a 3-6 matchup of the Bucks and the Pacers. And I remember, I asked you if we could talk to our audience about this now. In a Bucks-Pacers series right now, today, who are you picking to win? And you said David Thorpe.
I said the Pacers. I knew they won 4 or 5 against the Bucks. And then what did I tell you about that 6 spot?
And you said the 6 spot, that's where you want to be in the East. And think, and folks, the 6 spot means if the seedings hold today, you would play the Milwaukee Bucks, which include Giannis, a 2-time MVP, DPOY, and a Finals MVP, and Damian Lillard. And David Thorpe is like, no, you want to be there because that means you will avoid Boston until the conference finals. And Milwaukee, I think David and I both think they are probably beatable. We're not sold on them as juggernauts for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible it sounds stupid and that it is stupid. I mean, it's possible Milwaukee waxes, you know, someone.
Sure.
We still have a ways to go yet. They can catch fire. Didn't they have a big win this weekend?
Yeah, they beat Philly. Embiid, of course, but, you know. Right. They beat Denver two nights ago.
That was the one. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I just the way Cleveland – first of all, it'd be great to be three seed to play the 6 and then the 2. That's hard. The 4-5 is going to be a war, and Miami is going to be in the running for that. And that's Miami bubbles their way up to a 5 spot. That means they're playing really well, and we know their history in the, as a playoff team. And so the same thing if you're a 4 and they're a 5, you're a 5 and they're a 4. The 6 versus Milwaukee at 3, which is where I think it'll be. They may be the 2. And then you're playing Cleveland that also doesn't have a great history of winning. I think the 4-5 is the is a little bit scarier, and then you play Boston in the next round either way. So it's all tough, but yeah, I think that I think you might see some jockeying depending on how things lay out, Gerard. If Milwaukee is going to be the 3 as we get to the last 2 weeks of the season, if it looks likely they'll be the 3, you might see some teams losing a game or two to get to the 6 spot to play them. That'll be interesting to follow. Now, if Cleveland and Milwaukee just winning out and they finish second and third just because Boston keeps winning more, well, then they're all screwed because all these teams are playing great. But they hope it would be one of them isn't playing so great, but they make it because they had a big lead, then they're not doing so well, then Philly dropped because Embiid's out, New York dropped because of their, you know, they're missing guys. That would be the hope for a team that wants to drop to 6 on purpose.
Yeah, I mean, it's we talked about this a little bit. Playoff seeding is important and all that. And look, we are obviously a science and a math based show. So clearly we don't believe in things like basketball gods, but do you think that you run yourself into trouble by trying to game the system, in lack of a better word? Because ultimately if your goal is to win, you have to beat good teams regardless. So, I mean, well, you know, you screw around and you're like, oh, we got the spot we wanted. And then you're like, you know, something happens and now you're like, crap, we can't beat this team anyway or whatever. I think there's a chance of that, right?
I was hoping you would ask me that question. So first of all, yeah, I'm the guy that when you hear referees say ball don't lie, I just laugh. Not referees, I'm sorry.
Players.
Players or announcers. Announcers. Ball lies all the time. I mean, all the time. Yeah. So let's forget about that. I think, yes, the answer to your question is I don't think it's basketball gods. I think it's fucking with your own confidence and chemistry. I don't know. Maybe it's endorphins. There's a feeling you get when you win that you don't get when you lose. And enough of that feeling. Every year in the NCAA tournament, where it's one and dones, the teams that just are on hot streaks, you tend to FAU, San Diego State. There's some team that are just amazing and they lose some games because they play in a tough conference. But these teams that have won 10, 12, 14, 15 in a row from bad leagues or lower-level leagues who play these mighty teams to the buzzer, that's not an accident. They figured out how to win. They normally limit their turnovers. They limit your second shots. They maximize their shooting opportunities. Maybe they kill the offensive glass. They just have a rhythm and a feel because they keep winning. I would want to try to accomplish that same feeling as an NBA coach. Let's play as great as we can and not worry about who our opponent is. I'm not telling you I'm right. That's just the way I look at it.
No, but I agree with you because, again, if your goal is to go deep in the playoffs or win a championship, you're not going to beat scrubs. You got to beat good teams regardless. So, okay. I mean, What are we doing? Like,
well, I could see an owner saying, "Hey, I want to make sure we get to round the next round for money." I don't think they're right to say lose these games, but I understand the strategy behind it. I just don't think it's smart.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so that's the East we looked at, and there's, you know, some things are going to change there for sure, injury wise. We're all obviously in a firm belief that no one's catching Boston 7.5 games up on Cleveland. As hard as Cleveland's playing right now, I mean, Boston's, they just keep winning games, so I don't really know what people are going to do there. In the Western Conference, however, we have a little more jumble. Minnesota, Oklahoma City tied for first right now at 40-17. Nuggets only a game and a half back. Clippers only 2.5 back. I think those four, that's where the seeding position will change.
Yeah, that's the line.
From 5 through 10 now, it's a little different thing because you've got Sacramento and Phoenix. They're 6.5 back. The Pelicans are also 6.5 at 7 at 7th place. The Mavericks are only 7 back and they're at 8. So those teams, the Kings, Suns, Pelicans, Mavericks, those four, I think, will jockey as well. You got the Lakers and Warriors behind them, and we'll talk about them later. Is there anywhere in the West you think is advantageous, or is it just like, man, just get into the playoffs and roll your dice from there?
Yeah, I don't think any of those top four teams or teams are like, ooh, we wouldn't mind playing them. I don't think.
Whereas that includes the champs.
For sure. Yeah, as much as I think they have a weak bench, it's still, first of all, it's altitude. Do they have the best home record? They might have the best home record.
Probably, I think they do. Yeah,
it's not fun to play in Denver. I've talked to plenty of players who don't like it. They like visiting Denver just fine, but it's not a fun altitude to play at. And they have a guy named Jokic on the team. He's pretty good. Jamal Murray's pretty good. Jamal Murray's
Celtics
playing really
have the
well
best record by two games. They're 26-3. The Nuggets 25-5.
But so best in the West.
Best home in the West. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I thought. So yeah, the Clippers have the big three, and Ty Lue's not a fun guy to go against. So. Yeah, I think that top four is. I mean, you could argue 1 and 2 more so than 3 and 4 because just correct. They're just not accomplished,
right? Yes. Right? Yes. But, yes.
But then you're asking if you're in 6, and you're scheduled to play. Who's the 3 seed now? Is it Denver? Are the Clippers over Denver?
Yes, it is the Clippers. Oh, there's Denver right now. So that'd be Phoenix and Denver round one because Phoenix is the 6th seed right now.
Right. So if you're the 6th seed to play that 3 seed and you're like, you know what? I'd rather play OKC or Minnesota. Well, now you got to do the play-in. Who wants that? No, you'd rather just be guaranteed. So no, I don't think there's any sweet spot like there is in the East. And we always say this, the postseason looks like it's going to be great. And we went through a stretch here, Gerard, where first we thought more parity than ever, and then it looked like maybe not. Now it's starting to look like it is again. I realize Boston's the best team, but their bench is suspect, and they've not made it but to one finals, and they kind of didn't play well at the end there, those last 3 games. I think it's pretty wide open. I could see, it's hard to say Cleveland until you look at their talent and how well they played.
Super talented.
Milwaukee's got Giannis and Dame, and they could easily find themselves rolling. When Embiid comes back, I think they're good enough to win a championship. He's just that good. Yeah. So, yeah, I think the West is loaded with teams, and we're going to get to Golden State in L.A., and they're, 9-10 right now?
Yep.
Come on. Yeah.
So, in the West, and I think part of the reason why there's that sort of, all right, we're not as worried is because of what you said, right? Oklahoma City and Minnesota, as good as they have been this year, and they've been phenomenal, they don't have playoff track record. But as I've said a million times in this show, nobody has playoff track record until they have playoff track record, right? Like you don't do it until you do it. Eventually, most teams will do it as a collective unit. And I wonder, again, look, you mess around and you think, all right, OKC, like we can beat these guys. But look, what if those young guys, for whatever reason, the playoffs don't overawe them and they play well and Shea is just on a heater and Daniel devises like ridiculous strategy and all of a sudden you find yourself 2-2 and you're like, shit. These guys are really fucking good. We might have underestimated them, right? There's no guarantee just because they haven't had success, you're going to beat them. Over 82 games, they've been, or so far, over 60-something games, they've been very good, right? I get that playoff basketball is different, but they have a large sample size that says we do some things very well on a basketball court, which is why our record is what it is.
Well, and to be very specific, if you're 2-2, well, now you've got 2 or 3 games still to play in OKC.
Correct.
Because they have home court advantage. So... yeah, I think in the Thunder's case, I've been saying all along, I don't know what Josh Giddey does in the playoffs. I think that's a real question. They're gonna make him and Dort especially, but definitely Giddey the most. He's going to have to make shots, and he's going to have to guard a lot. And they're going to have to – I have a feeling he's not going to be ready for it. I could be wrong. I'm not saying definitely, but if that's the case, they're going to have to figure out another way. Nevertheless, what you're saying is right. They've been playing great. And, you know, Chet's still young. Shea's never had to do it at any high level before with the role he's in now. I still pick him as the MVP. But this is a different, you know, the postseason's different. So, and Minnesota, like I'm hearing people say, they're definitely going to move off of Gobert or Towns. I mean, insider is saying Gobert or Towns are gone next year.
But wait, Gobert or both?
One or the other. That's what I'm told. Okay. One or the other. Okay. And maybe Naz Reid would play, because they love, the person I was talking to was saying that maybe Naz would play in that spot with one of them. And so that plays to their head a little bit. Just maybe they get to them. They do play great defense, but their offense can be really suspect.
Very suspect.
Anthony 21?
Yeah, he's young. 21.
Is he? 22. Jeez.
He's crazy. He's a baby. And he's so good.
I love him now. I didn't love him coming out of college. I love him now. But I don't know. I mean, right now, if I said to you who's going to win the West, we don't have to make the decision now. But if you did, who would you pick?
The Clippers just right now because of how they're playing, but I'm not even 100% sold on that. I feel the same.
Clippers, Denver, coin flip to me.
Yeah. That's a good way to say it. Yeah. Coin flip between those two.
Yeah. So.
Whew. All right, guys. We'll be back after a quick commercial break. All right, David. We talked about the West and why we don't know who's who, right? We said a coin flip between Denver and the Clippers.
Yeah.
And we said that, look, as good as OKC and Minnesota are, they're young. Phoenix has got vets who were really good and they're playing well. You got, as I said to you, we started the show talking about Luka, and I said last week, would it surprise you if Luka and Kyrie got that team to the conference finals? Hell no. Luka took a worse team by himself to the conference finals 3 years ago, and they're better now. You so astutely pointed out, they won the trade on deadline. Only suffered their first loss since the trade deadline last night against Indiana. Yeah. But they're really, really good, and you know how skilled those two guys are. Nightmare. Good luck guarding them if they're on one. So they could make it. So anything can happen. And I say all that to say, the Golden State Warriors, despite losing to the Nuggets last night, and they got kind of drummed out in that fourth quarter. Denver really.
It was a close game until then.
Close game, yeah, until the fourth, yeah. But Denver really kind of put it on them in the fourth. Steph didn't shoot well. Variety of issues. Golden State's 8-2 in their last 10. You know, things are positive and more smiley and happy. We talked about winning and how winning makes people feel really good about themselves. And, you know, it also can kind of put lipstick on a pig and hide some things that, you know, you may not want to see because we're doing so well now. Steve Kerr got his contract extension, so he'll be there for 2 more years. He's lined up with Steph now.
How much money?
$37 million. So he's the highest paid coach in the league. And now for those 2 seasons. Look, Draymond's back. They're playing well. Klay's on the bench. Kuminga's playing well. Wiggins is showing signs of life. Everybody's feeling good about the Warriors. And I asked, like, David, I'm not sure. They're still 10th. In that streak, they haven't beaten anybody of consequence besides the Suns at home, and that was at the buzzer on a Curry shot.
And what's Phoenix in the West right now?
6th.
Yeah, so they beat the 6th seed. And they beat Indiana on the road, a 6th seed. Right. Indiana was just exhausted at that point, but they blew Indiana out. They played great. Yeah.
But, you know, they haven't beaten – they lost to Denver last night. They haven't beaten Boston. So I'm just like, is this more mirage and fool's gold? And I wonder, because you say winning, right, it kind of elicits a certain pheromone, right, and hormone, and you're like, oh, we feel good. With the Warriors, I wonder, is it a double effect, right? Not only does it increase that good feeling of feeling good, but it also harkens back to, we do this all the time. We always win because we're the Golden State Warriors. Look at our trophy case. And then it gets you thinking, we're better than we actually are, because I'm still not sure they're very good.
There's a few things there. The Tiger effect is something I like thinking about. I'm old enough to remember when Tiger was just the greatest athlete. He was must-watch TV, I thought.
Oh, for sure.
I enjoyed it anyway.
Yeah, it was great.
And I remember reading an article years ago. He was still in the height of his prime that listed the average – his average final round on Sundays and any event, not just Masters. And then if he was in the final pairing, and then
his playing partner was always considerably worse.
Terrible, typically.
By a lot.
It did good. Yeah. It might've been someone else playing well, but they weren't playing with Tiger. And so to me, part of this would be potentially if Golden State, and I'll talk a minute about what their record is, but if they make it, they lost last year, like they lose, but they're playing better now. And if they start cooking, how are their opponents going to handle? Oh man, we're about to get swamped. Right, this team is rolling again, and so that's something to think about. They've earned that. They've earned the privilege of being able to have that kind of mystique about them, like Miami football back in the day. You know, any kind of dynasty. Did you see the tweet I sent you about what their record is against teams that project at 50 wins?
Yep.
What was it?
Not great.
3-15, maybe.
Yeah.
That changes some as teams go in and out of being looking like they're going to win 50, but at present, I think they're 3-15 against teams that project to win 50 games this year. Mm-hmm. So now I will tell you, I looked it up today in the last 15 games. So not the last 10 where they're 8-2. Last 15, I want to say they're 4th in offense efficiency, 5th in defense efficiency. That's a very good sign. Nevertheless, I don't think it was built up against great teams. So I don't see them as a likely first round winner. They're likely going to be a play-in team. How many are they from the sixth spot, Gerard?
They are four games.
And that's Phoenix, who's playing better, although Beal's out.
Beal's out again, which is so problematic. And they have three teams in front of them, the Lakers, the Mavs, and the Pelicans. All, by the way, including Phoenix, good teams. Not bad. Right. Lakers maybe a little whatever. But
the other team play well. And that's a factor, as we have often said, speaking of the golf analogy, you'd rather be in second place, 5 strokes behind the leader, than in 7th place, 2 strokes behind the leader, because you still have to outplay everybody else. Golden State finds himself in that more similar position of Dallas is like they look good. Indiana just played great last night, and Dallas. They're missing Exum. It matters to some degree, not a ton, but they're when those guys are rolling, and Phoenix and. It's
and the Pelicans
it's
gonna are good.
Be tough. And the Pelicans are good. Yeah, they're playing defense. And Zion has not been the guy that I thought he would be, and yet they're still winning. And so if he ever can become that great scorer again, as we've talked about before, you and I. Yeah, so I think Golden State's gonna have we all want them to do well. The narrative is, we want Klay to buy into his off the bench role and Pods to be a rookie of not rookie of the year, but a rookie first team candidate, whatever. And Wiggins is resurgence. He's like a phoenix, and his comeback again. He died and now he's back again. Mm-hmm. Draymond and whatever narrative you want to say with him. I like Saric. I love Trayce Jackson-Davis.
Yeah. Good young vertical big.
Yep. Do you know who his dad is?
No.
I just went blank on it. I loved his father too. Davis, his dad, is a former NBA player. And I'm so embarrassed that I brought it up and don't even remember the name. But it's someone I loved watching.
Oh, Dale Davis is his dad.
Yeah. So I actually coached Dale Davis when he won't remember this probably, when he was at Clemson. Him and Eldon Campbell, I worked out at night. They were counselors at a big all-star camp that I worked at. And the head guy said, I want you to work these guys out. I was 25, whatever. And I was blown away with Dale Davis. Blown away with his talent. He couldn't score outside 11 inches, but... This was back when he was in college, but wow, was he a talent. I love his son. I think his son should have been a first-round pick. And so Looney's kind of on his way out right now. Doesn't look like he's so healthy to me, and the other guys are playing better. Still, it's a tough road for them. Tough road. Yeah. I mean, with Steph Curry, there's always a chance. He's just so magical. They are, I think, number 2 or 3 or 4 in three-point shooting percentage, 39.8 on those 15 games. That spells out a lot. Because if they're making those threes, the Cuisinart can really cut you up. If they're not, they're much more limited.
And since they're there, and we just talked about them, they played Sunday night. Phoenix beat them, pulled away in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Phoenix was a big 20, I think, early, and then Lakers kind of fought back to get within 3 or 4. The Lakers, we talked, right? It's still a Darvin Ham situation to you. And then the LeBron thing worries me in terms of just him being healthy. I mean, so I'm on the bench again. He's dealing with that ankle. He's got to get treatment counseling. And if he and Davis are not spectacular.
No chance.
Yeah. Just got nothing.
It is something to be said, Gerard. You mentioned LeBron and his health. Like, he seemed immortal for so long. He doesn't seem that anymore. It hasn't for a couple of years now.
No.
You know, they got swept by Denver last year. He's always struggled to stay healthy for long periods of time. He's the best ever at his age, but he's not the best ever. Like, this guy isn't the best ever.
Right, correct.
And it is what it is.
And look, and I said it, they won the in-season tournament. I know people may think that that's a championship. They got a trophy. They're early in the season, and we talked about this with Henry about the All-Star game as it relates to the later you go, because the All-Star game is played so late now in February. These guys are exhausted, right? And we want our athletes to be able to run really fast, jump high, and dunk. Well, when was LeBron and Anthony Davis at their best? Early in the season, right? When they didn't have as many miles on, like, it's later now, right? And so the injuries are starting to pick up, and we know biggest predictor of future injury is previous injury, right? I mean, LeBron for the longest time was the NBA's bionic man, but ever since LA, he's missed a part of every single season since he's gotten to LA. And it's just, it makes sense, right? It's wear and tear. It's the reality of playing physical basketball in the NBA.
And then consider this, the last few games they play before the break is within a week of being exactly 4 months before the NBA Finals are being played. That's how long of a trip we still have.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about this season through, and now it's 3.5 months. Right. A long time. It's 3.5 months. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he's been doing this for a long time. It wears you down.
Year 21?
Yeah. 03 is when he started, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, But I mean, what he's done is incredible. As you see, he's
it's ridiculous.
Was it 72 points shy of 40,000?
Is that right?
Which is just and someone, I forget, might have been Richard Jefferson said it on the broadcast. He thinks that when he's done, LeBron's all-time scoring record and Stockton's all-time assist record are going to be the two things that he doesn't think anybody's going to be able to catch for a while. They're going to set them just so far apart. I mean, and it might be. I mean, 40,000 points. I mean, let's think about it. Kareem didn't get to 40, right? Like, I mean, it's just, and it's going to take someone to be playing 20 plus years like LeBron and still averaging over 25 points. Like, probably not likely, right? It's highly unlikely for someone to be able to do that. They're going to have to start super young, be healthy and durable for the majority of their career, which we can't predict that. It's we're seeing special things here. Listen, the NBA will last for a long time, long after we're gone. But man, we've seen some special people play this game over its 78-year history. My math might be off by a year or two, something like that.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
David, the Clippers are going to move into their new building next season, the Intuit Dome. Shout out to wherever the Intuit company is for naming rights on that. Zach Lowe put an article out in ESPN about how the Clippers went through a whole rebranding exercise in terms of just changing up the image and the logos and the colors around, not the colors so much, but the front-facing imagery the team.
Right.
They even talked about potentially changing the name, but in focus groups, it was vehemently rejected by them. Like, no, keep the name, despite the fact that the Clippers, that name has been synonymous with losing. Right when they had the Donald Sterling era for so many years. I think all of this is fascinating because Bomber is looking at this from two vantage points, right? He wants to turn the Clippers into a global brand, obviously. And one of the ways you do that, of course, is by this kind of stuff they're doing in terms of the new court and the logos and the jerseys and all that. But it also is about the on-court product. And really, since the Chris Paul era, David, the Lob City with him and Blake Griffin, when healthy, this has been a very good team. They've made the playoffs just about every year, give or take, right? And when they're whole, they got a shot at contending. They went to the conference finals 2 years ago. Or 3 years ago.
Yeah. We like to trash billionaires. we used to do it more than we do it now. During the pandemic, there wasn't anything to talk about.
So we had to kill him.
I mean, I think he's done a hell of a job with the Clippers.
He has.
There's like, if you start listing bad franchises, you have to spend a long time before you get to the Clippers. And they're not bad. Yeah. So what do you think about keeping their name?
I think it's a great idea.
Me too.
I think, I love that he did focus groups. And Steve said it. I mean, this is what he would do in business.
Yeah.
They're not the definitive word, right? It's not just they say it. That's what I do. But there's a focus group for a reason. Right? They do the same thing with movies, just about everything you guys can think of. It goes through focus group testing before it comes out into the world for people to see it. And what those focus groups say matter, right? They do a cross-section of people, and so they want to know what's the reaction going to be like from people. And I think taking away the name or changing it might sort of, it would take away some of their fans and lose something, right? And I like the idea of them embracing their history of who they are. Clippers, for people who know, it's about Clipper ships, because this team started in San Diego. That's where they were originally from. And it's where the ports were down in San Diego, and the Clipper ships out in the water during that
right.
time. So I love that. And they are leaning into that nautical theme now. Next year, when you get to the court, you'll see that on the flooring, on the new jerseys, you'll see nautical cool. flags. I'm in. Listen, there's no reason why the Clippers can't be a brand. Look, again, as right. I say,
I agree.
If they win on the floor,
no, yeah. it,
all that old clip joint, Donald Sterling shit, no one's going to remember that. All they're going to remember is, yo, remember that team that won a title with Kawhi and PG and whoever? Yeah, that's going to be the history.
I winning solves all those problems. And he seems to really care.
He does.
My sources tell me he isn't someone that tells Lawrence Frank what to do, that he's just a fan and the bank. And Lawrence is a basketball guy. He's done,
yeah.
he's done a good job. He's well respected. I've had some agents tell me that Lawrence is one of their favorite people to deal with. He's very upfront about everything, very direct. I've known Lawrence since he was a college kid. I've not talked to him in a long time, but he was always very earnest. As he's the president of the team, runs the team. The Lakers, you know, if you look at a 5-year window, both teams look like they're in some trouble down the road.
Yes.
But the Clippers are a better run right now. So
they are.
You would think they're going to make a comeback before the LA will.
Without question, you mentioned he's a fan. So Steve Ballmer, and he gets clowned a lot on social media just because, like, he just...
You think he cares?
No, listen, I was just going to say, and you mentioned him as the bank. Steve Ballmer, one of the wealthiest men in the world. Net worth somewhere north of $122 billion.
Is that right?
You know, it fluctuates by the day. If you've ever watched Forbes' real-time net worth, like, it'll, you know, just all their holdings, it depends on what's going on in the market, right?
Yeah.
But bottom line, the man is super, super wealthy, but he cares. Like, you can see, he legitimately wants the team to be good. He's a fan. You see him at games, get so excited when they go on runs. But in that way, I love that you said he doesn't seem like a meddler type. One of the things that these guys who are super successful in their business lives, and Ballmer used to work, worked at Microsoft.
Yeah.
You hire smart people and you trust that you've hired the right people and you let them do their job. Now, and you empower them to do their job. If they are not doing their job and you've given them everything you can, then it's on you. You fucked up. You got to do something different and pivot, like we talked about earlier. But how you get people to succeed, right people, bring in your culture and empower them. As David says, leadership is breathing spirit into the hearts and minds of others. You're doing all that. And that's what Steve seems to be doing in LA. So good on them. Look, if the Clippers are great, I think that's great for LA. Like, I'd love for them to be better than the Lakers. Not because I don't like the Lakers. I grew up a Lakers fan. But, like, I just think it'd be fun if they're the dominant team. And it's like, all right, Lakers, what you got now? You've got to kind of, you know, turn your ship around a little bit.
Listen, we both want it shouldn't be a zero-sum game in the NBA.
Correct.
We want 30 teams to be good. Not great. Yes. You can't have 30 great teams. But you could have real parity where, you know, winning 45 games means you're going to be like a 4-seed. Mm-hmm. It hasn't happened, but it could.
Yep.
The well-run teams run circles around the poorly run teams. And the Clippers seem to be a well-run team. They took some gambles. They probably would like to have Shea. But we may very well see OKC LA.
Ooh.
And that would be, you know, 2-3 battle, whatever that would be.
That would be very nice.
Interesting to the past, yes, the present versus the future. I probably would lean towards the Clippers today. They're not playing for months. But right. I lean for him today, to him today.
No, it's exciting. And your point is right, David. That is, we talked about the next frontier sort of in the NBA. The teams that, I mean, it's not a secret. Like, the teams that just figure out, how do we find the competitive edges? How do we run our franchises as well as possible, right? And that starts from ownership. If the owners don't want that, it is not going to matter on the basketball. And now sometimes you have transcendent talents like LeBron James who might be able to overcome despite. But more often than not, the team's got to be run well in order for you to have a chance. And, you know, that's kind of all we want as NBA fans, is for these teams to be run well.
Yep.
All right, guys. We will see you on Thursday. Take care.